Go for it, Terry.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the NLA Courtroom Observers Conference Call for July, what is today?
16th,
2017.
It's August.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm always a little behind the times. Okay. Well, August 16th, 2017. If anybody has anything to report, please go ahead. The mic is open.
Well, I'm gonna have a little discussion concerning the trial out in Nevada. I want to give a little background on what's happening.
Okay, I'll be back in a while. We'll do your bit. Okay?
What's happening out here right now is a retrial in Nevada because they had a hung jury on the last trial. And on this trial, prosecution was allowed all the witnesses they wanted. None were denied. They used pictures and videos, and all of their witnesses were law enforcement type people. They took, I don't know, a good week or so for the prosecution's testimony. And then it became time for the defense case. Right from the start, defense was not allowed to talk about any of the negative things that law enforcement, BLM, did at the Bundy Ranch. They were not allowed to show videos and pictures of what was done by the BLM out there. Judge Navarro made the ruling that because all of the defense witnesses were law enforcement, the defendants did not have the right to question them and to defend themselves from their statements. Now, they allowed Eric Parker to come to the stand. He was asked where he was looking, and he said straight ahead and to the right. What did you see? I saw snipers on the hills. Boom. It was shut down. I didn't want him. He was not supposed to say those things. That was negative things about the BLM. He was not supposed to talk about that. So they drug him off of the witness stand and scrubbed his testimony. They would not allow it. And in the first place, all the non-defendant witnesses that the defense had to go before Judge Navarro and give their testimony prior to the jury hearing it. Once Navarro heard their testimony, she denied all of their testimony, would not let the jury hear from any of them. Well, after they scrubbed Eric Parker, dragging him off the stand. And, of course, the judge had a mental breakdown and stormed out of the court. Then yesterday, the day before, I should say, they let Mr. Drexler, another defendant, have a say, but they were very careful not to allow him to say anything wrong. They gave him the word that if she so much as raised her hand in the air, this is Judge Navarro, if she so much as raised her hand, he was to shut up and quit talking, you know, just no more testimony. But then there was another two defendants that were not allowed to defend themselves. And so yesterday, the prosecution, they sent their weakest member up and gave a very weak prosecution talk because they had planned for their best prosecutor to do the redirect on the defenders, on the defense people. However, the defense, one by one, all four of them, refused to give closing arguments. The prosecutors and the jury once again had their jaws on the floor and had to pick them up. The prosecutors have tried to file charges against the defense. And the defense asked for a mistrial. Of course, that was denied. I'm not sure about sanctions that the prosecution asked for. But that action by the defense prompted the jury and the prosecutors and the judge to be totally in shock again. And it ended up defense never did rest their case, and they refused to give closing arguments, and so prosecution could not redirect. So the judge told the jury to go into the deliberation room, and she left the court once again. Today, the jury is still in deliberation. The judge, I'm told, stormed out of the courtroom again today after reading something, a note or something that was handed to her. Nobody knows what it is or what it was. So now, if you people were in the courtroom through all of this, witnessing all of this as courtroom observers, I'd like to know what your reactions would have been. You know, what would you do? What would you feel? How would you handle it? I'll sit back and hear what your discussion might be. Anybody?
I'm not an observer. I was Jim out in New Mexico, but that sounds like that's going to be a mistrial, and the whole point of it is to keep them in jail that much longer.
Well, I think you're right. They're trying to lock them up for 80 or 90 years. They'd like to just keep them for life. And they thought they were doing everything possible not to have a mistrial, But how could it be any other than not guilty?
I believe they call that a miscarriage of justice.
Absolutely a miscarriage of justice, at the very least.
It's disgusting, you know, that this is going on. That's all I have to say.
Well, that's what we're trying to put a stop to here in the MLA. That's why we want to take back our courts. It's very important for courtroom observers to go there and observe the tyranny, the miscarriage of justice, and to take notes and to write affidavits. And being a courtroom observer is so much more important than most people can even know. I've said it 1,000 times, and I'll keep saying it. One person in the courtroom as a courtroom observer can impact the case greatly. I have personally seen all charges dropped in cases simply because I sat there for 2 days taking notes and made a big show of taking notes, wore my badge, and was in suit and tie. The man walked away from that court without any of the charges being adjudicated. They were dismissed. And that has happened often with our courtroom observers. So, it's been established that this case is a miscarriage of justice. It absolutely is. Now, what would you guys do? I mean, you got your tablets, you got your pens, you're sitting there. You're probably in shock yourself over what you're hearing.
I got an idea.
Okay.
Send the affidavit to the nearest base commander. Show that Navarro has gone rogue and that she's violating the Constitution. The military is the ultimate arbiter of this kind of activity, and they should be informed. Find out whose side they're on.
Well, you know, most people would never think about, but you are right that a senior military officer can walk in and take it over. I don't know the process for it. Probably very few people know what the process for it is because I have never, ever heard of it happening. But that's an idea. Glad to hear it. Well, the biggest thing I see is that as a courtroom observer, sitting through something like that is not to let yourself be distracted. Know that you are hearing history being made and record it the best you can. You can't take your phone in or any recording device, but you got your pen and tablet. Record everything you hear and see happen there would be my answer. And definitely, in the case right now, they have 4 defendants. They're all being tried separately, but together. And so they all need a transcript. You could write one and make 3 copies and give one to each of the 4. course, you probably want a couple of extra. But you could get them notarized right there at the court as a court clerk. So you could write it and hand it to their attorneys before you left the courtroom. And I would imagine that you'd have several pages of written observation. So I would, you know, you definitely do not want to add personal feelings in your affidavit, but you want the story told with facts. State all the facts in your affidavit. But I think probably if you were sitting through this Nevada trial, it would be a good experience for all courtroom observers to really see just how far the courts are going for a conviction. And how open they are about it. They act like nobody is going to stop them.
Robert?
Yes.
I don't know whether I have the right information or not, but I was reading something today, or this week, excuse me, about the juries, you know, grand juries. And I believe, I was sitting here trying to remember the reference, and I can't even remember what it was that I was reading. But it said that if a person, a man or a woman, wants to, let the grand jury know that something is wrong, that it really, this resource said that it's not the sheriff that you file your affidavit with, that this resource said that you go to your state Supreme Court and file it with the state Supreme Court. And so I don't know whether that's accurate or not, but whether it's the sheriff or the state Supreme Court or maybe both, copies of our affidavits could be sent to them too. And or maybe that's a question. Could our affidavits be sent, you know, just a copy? And then also, I had a situation with my mom where I went before a judge and for her, on her behalf. And anyway, I didn't understand the ruling. And so when I was downtown, I was by the in the courthouse, and I went up to see the judge because I wanted to ask him if I could get him to tell me what the statutes were if I wrote to him. And so when we were talking, I also told him about something else that was going on that an attorney had, really what the attorney did, I believe, was set up a trust in my late mother's name and make himself or his company, I mean, the beneficiary of it, and then transfer some property papers into there. And so I was, you know, telling him that because he was pretty friendly and caring, yeah. He seemed like. And he said,
yeah.
Well, he, huh? He said it sounds like that the judicial board needed to hear about that and also the attorney's disciplinary board. And so when we see an atrocity going on in the courtroom, would that be appropriate to send our affidavits to those four places as well?
Well, I'm sure they were probably talking about the grand juries that we have today. And yes, it would be appropriate to do that. I'm not sure what we could expect from it, since they're all in collusion with each other. But yes, by all means.
Well, we would at least have, I mean, if we had the money to do it, we would at least have, well, even if we went to the library and faxed it or something, you know, for a dollar a sheet, we'd have evidence that they were notified of this error.
Well, you'd have to, what you'd need to do if you were going to send it is send it in such a way that they have the sign for it.
Oh, okay.
So that you could prove that they did receive it.
Oh, I see.
Because they often, if they don't have the sign for it, they tend to lose it.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So.
Okay.
Always make sure you have the proof that it was served, or sent.
Okay. Thank you.
I think it's a good idea. A lot of people would mute.
Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think what happens if you do that, at least you're informing these authorities and you have the moral high ground. A lot of people ask me about the NLA and the papers that they file, and they say, well, what's your enforcement? Well, we don't have any enforcement at this point. But that's going to come later. But once we claim the moral high ground, that will follow. That's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, our stack of evidence is getting bigger.
Right.
Well, one thing about all the papers that we write, there's no statute of limitation in common law. And so no matter how long it takes, those papers can be enforced at a later time. So, yes, a paper trail, documentation, proof of serving, those are all needed things. And by being, you know, I like the idea, I agree with Terry, I like the idea of making sure these people have an affidavit, but make sure it's notarized. That makes it official. That makes it legal, lawful, whatever language you want to use. It's a paper trail, and God bless you for sending it. But now, there have been a lot of people sitting in the courthouse in Nevada. We should be having 50, 60 affidavits each and every day coming out of there. I'm not sure that we even have one. But if we can get our members, the NLA members, to realize how important being a courtroom observer is, along with how important affidavits are, what a difference we could make. We could put the fear big time in those judges. We could start, we could make some change, some big time changes. And if we could just get people to form committees of safety, because if you form a committee of safety properly, you're involving all the people in your county. And by involving all the people in your county, you are educating them and you are uniting them. And once you have a populace informed and united, you take control of what's happening in your county. And if every county did this, then you control what the state does. And if every state is being controlled by the people once again, then you control what the government does. That's the power of we the people. And you would think that people would want to take back the power. But in truth, it seems that people are, for a large part, don't want to get involved. It's too much trouble for them. They might end up in jail, and how scary would that be? Well, how scary is it for all these innocent people that are ending up in jail? We the people need to forget about our own safety, our own well-being, our own, you know, living the good life, and come together united and make it possible for everyone to be free. Not just us, but everyone. And we can do that. We can do that by being courtroom observers. We can do that by being members of the NLA and by forming committees of safety. We continue to grow in membership, and there is so much more that we can do. We can be the best courtroom observers possible by being well-dressed, look like you belong, and look like you're somebody important. Wear the badge that says courtroom observer at the top, your picture in the center, National Liberty Alliance at the bottom. Take great notes. Write great affidavits. Be a member of the Committee of Safety. Pay attention to what the core group is teaching you. Take it upon yourself to learn the Constitution take the civics course, learn the common law. Educate yourself and also be educated by the committees of safety. Be involved in the actions taken. When you're in a committee of safety, the core group represents the people. The people decide what the core group of the Committee of Safety is going to do, what they're going to fight for. And so it's the people in the county that make the decisions. It's the will of the people that is important. If you don't get involved for whatever reason, then you have no right to complain about what is being done. We all need to be involved. We all need to take part. We all need to unite together. We all need to form the best committee of safety possible, and we need to make sure that our elected officials know without a doubt that if they don't listen to us, they will not be an elected official much longer. We don't have to wait until the election time to take them out. If we have the majority of the people in the county involved in part of the committees of safety, we can file a petition of recall. And once that is done, then there's a vote in the county. And if the people win that vote, that elected official is out. Another election is held to replace him with someone that you have thoroughly checked out and know that he or she will listen to you. And you're taking control every time you do that. And those of you who are interested in the Committees of Safety, tomorrow night is the Committee of Safety call. At the same time, same number. I'd really like to see all of you there. But we the people are the power. You can make it happen. You can be a very important cog in the wheel to make it happen by your actions as a courtroom observer and by being a part of the committees of safety. Now, look around your counties and see if there's not a group that's doing that. They may not be called Committees of Safety. They may be called Community Watch, Community Guards, or whatever. But check them out. They may be trying to form what we know as a Committee of Safety. Be a part of it. I know you're all tired of hearing me talk, so anybody else want to talk? Do you have anything, Jan?
No, nothing in particular.
Wow. Nobody has anything? Well, I want to thank those of you who did participate. And I hope that we will see more participation. Talk to your friends. Get them to come in. Be a part of the NLA. Be a part of the courtroom observers. Be a part of the committees of safety. Room for all of you. And the more we have, the more power we have, the more we can accomplish. So.
You know, Bob, it's funny you should mention that thing about the community watch groups, because actually while you were talking about that, I went on to the site in New Jersey for Community Watch, and ironically enough, in New Jersey, it's controlled by this guy who's basically a shill for the municipal government. So it's funny how they have all kind of already glommed onto this stuff.
Well, if they're if the person is a shill for the elected officials, the government, then definitely you need to counter your own group.
Well, yeah, because it says here, New Jersey Citizen Corps State Coordinator, you know?
Yeah. Well, it takes people who value freedom to step up and lead it, or at least to help form it. I mean, if you don't want to be a leader, help form it. Get somebody to lead it. But help them, you know, be there for them. Help them form it. And later on, you know, because in a committee of safety, the officers are changed out depending on the rules of your particular committee of safety. The officers are changed out every 6 months or a year, and they can't be reelected without having some time in between. And that is to make sure that power doesn't corrupt. That is to ensure that you hear from all the people and that all the people have a chance to be a part of the core group. But when you see wrong being done and you know that you can do something about it, do it. Go for it. If you don't know how, we certainly can guide you. I mean, the NLA has information on committees of safety. There's information on courtroom observing. And I also have a personal website on committees of safety, committee.org. Look it up. I think you'll find it interesting.
Well, Robert?
Yes.
I was kind of thinking along the lines of what Terry just said, and I've got papers that I've been printing out for the last few years and am just now getting them organized. And one of the stories that is from The Intercept, and it's the untold story of how Bill Clinton gutted habeas corpus. Well, the thing is that how that was done was this bill that, or act that was put through. It's called the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, or the AEDPA. It was signed by Bill Clinton, and what it did was it not only gutted habeas corpus. This is the act that actually made habeas corpus ineffective for now, you know, illegally, in my opinion. But what it also did, too, was it set up the community policing, which has turned out, in my opinion, has turned out, you know, what, 30 years later, 20, 30 years later, to be like where your neighbors are, they can report anything or nothing, you know what I mean? People can make stuff up and turn it in, and then you're put on a list. We even have one town here I'm next to it. It's in a different county, but we're butted up together. And they put, if somebody accuses you of something, they put it out on the internet withholding your name, but they give the address and the accusation and all that, put it online for people to look at. Well, anyway, so the whole point is that what Terry brought up was about how a lot of the community watch groups, they are like, I know we need to go in and rebut them, but they are really, in my opinion, not very savory. And
well,
so, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You need to check them out to make sure that they are a constitutional group before you join with them.
Yeah, I don't think community watch groups, any of them, I don't think that's constitutional the way they're being run off of this AEDPA Act of 1996. So, oh gosh, we got so much work to do.
We do, and for your knowledge, the habeas corpus cannot be done away with. It's in the Constitution. It cannot be done away with.
Well, I agree.
Yes, they have tried, but no, they cannot do it. I know that Oregon, even the Oregon legislature, voted to make it inactive, but they can't do it. It's not constitutional. The habeas corpus is protected by the Constitution, and that's to protect the people. So no matter what they do, they cannot do away with the habeas corpus.
Well, I agree with you, but I believe they're withholding it. Didn't John turn in like 30 or 50 or more habeas corpus?
They're trying to say that it's been abrogated, but it hasn't.
Yeah, but, right.
You know, we're dealing with tyranny.
Yeah.
We're trying to do the right thing, but we're dealing with tyranny. And so we just have to keep fighting until we gradually attain the power that we need. And we are working toward it. We are told by insiders in the government that we are having an effect, that to keep up what we're doing, because we are making positive change. So we keep going, we keep pushing, we keep doing everything we can, because we are having an impact on what's happening.
Robert?
Yes.
In answer to your question you asked earlier about what might you do if you were in that courtroom listening to this travesty proceed, if you go to the Courtroom Observer's page on the website, you know, several weeks ago or a month or two ago, we posted the Courtroom Observer's checklist. And it's a series of 15 or 20 violations that you might look for while you're in the court. And boy, are they hitting the list pretty well. Number one on the list, harassment and or seizure of a pocket constitution or a jury nullification handbook. And you could expand that to denying the jury access to information about either the constitution or jury nullification, which has been a banned topic. Second violation is failure to allow filing of defense papers, and you can add a whole pile onto that. Require them to submit their closing arguments, etc., to the judge for approval beforehand, all these sidebars with the judge to decide what the defense can talk about. You know, basically running them through a staging of what they're going to say without the jury there. That's certainly another one. The third one is judge prosecutor failure to provide and include findings of fact with denial of defendant's papers. Well, I don't know. Were the defendants able to file much of anything?
No.
Next violation, failure to allow a jury trial. Well, such as it was, we did have a kangaroo trial, jury, whatever. Next violation, failure to recognize and follow the Constitution. Wow, there's a biggie.
There's a biggie.
Treason against the Constitution, even bigger with bigger penalty. Next one is failure to produce verified complaint of damaged party. Well, their complaint is so off the wall that, you know, you might comment on that if it was read in court at the beginning. Next violation, failure to produce the damaged party. We have a lot of damaged lawmen and so forth and so on. Next one, failure to allow cross-examination of the damaged party.
Right.
I'm not sure if there was any cross-examination, was there, by the defense? Was there any allowed?
No, because the prosecution witnesses were all law enforcement, and the judge made the rule that the defendants couldn't defend themselves against what they said.
Right.
Which is totally unconstitutional.
Absolutely. You know, they're hitting the list just about 100% so far. The next violation is failure to meet elements of complaint. Well, if you don't allow any discussion of what happened, only the prosecution will be able to touch on their elements on the complaint they filed. No cross-examination. Next violation, failure to prove jurisdiction and operate in unknown jurisdiction. Well, that's certainly true. It's never questioned because they're in control. There will be no constitution. There will be no this or that. Next one, violation, failure to show the nature and cause of charges. I guess they did show what they thought were the charges, and again, allowed no real discussion of it.
None.
Next violation, failure to address proper party on court documents. Per Stiles manual, well, who knows? I haven't read it. Next violation, police cannot be a witness and a complainant at the same time. There must be verified complaint of damaged party.
Absolutely.
And the last one, I guess, is not one next to the last, is not applicable. Traffic tickets are not jailable offenses. Da, 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 da. The last one, well, I guess the judge didn't do that. No summary judgment. She just destroyed the rule of law in the courtroom. So she pretty much hit about 14 out of 17 there, right on the button.
Yep.
Including treason.
I was hoping somebody would bring that up in the discussion.
It's good to review that before you go into court if you're going to go in and be a courtroom observer, because, boy, it makes you think about everything the judge says and does, and also the prosecution and the defense, what they're allowed to do. It's a real good guideline. Not everything is always going to be applicable for each case you go on, but there's certainly a lot of meat for you to dwell on there in your affidavit.
Absolutely. And then affidavits are dynamite.
Well, on the jury thing, if it read, do you have an impartial jury, which they're supposed to have, then she would have instead of hitting 14, she would have hit 15 of 17, like an impartial jury of your peers. Because, I mean, the BLM employees or federal employees are not the peers of Mr. Clive and Bundy.
No, they're not.
Yeah, that's true. And the the jury tampering that went on at the start of the trial, too, was, you know, kind of unbelievable.
Yes, definitely was jury tampering.
It's a good instructional case how about jury tampering. Sorry, Robert, go ahead.
This is the kind of thing I wanted to bring up and get people thinking about being a courtroom observer. Get your curiosity going. Get you to thinking about what is coming up in court, what you need to do about it. You know, we all need to get involved. And so hopefully you people will go into the website and review what's available for information on courtroom observing, but also look at the committees of safety. Be involved. I can remember back years ago when I never wanted to be involved in anything. People kind of forced it on me. They didn't talk to me and tell me the whys and why nots and all that. It just as I lived life, and I'm 74 now, I've lived quite a bit of it. I've seen an awful lot as I traveled around the world. I could not help but get involved in whatever way possible. Sometimes it's very heartbreaking, very sad. But I can't stop. I have to keep going. I have to push for freedom. And so, I hope everyone will. Well, anyway, that's bringing us to the end of our hour. I hope that maybe each of you found something in this hour to think about. And I hope that you all will continue thinking about what you can do. And I certainly, I enjoy having you here. I'm very happy to see you people come in. It shows that you are interested in what we're doing. God bless all of you. And we'll see you next week.
God bless you, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.